Hey, everybody. What you're about to hear is a free preview of a podcast on our $5 exclusive episodes tier at patreon.com/retronauts. And if you want to hear the whole thing, please go to patreon.com/retronauts and sign up at the $5 exclusive episodes tier. Once you do that, you'll get access to all of our previous exclusive episodes and our future ones as well, as long as you remain a patron, and our exclusive episodes will launch every other Friday. Again, that is the Retronauts Patreon at patreon.com/retronauts, and I'll let you get to this free preview of one of our exclusive episodes. I do want to go over the history of these games in order, and talking about Portal 1. Let's start with that. So a Portal starts with a little project called Narbacular Drop. Narbacular is not a word, but they chose it because it would be very Google-friendly. Nothing else is called that. So this was a senior project made by students at the DigiPen Institute of Technology, and it basically is very Portal-like in terms of mechanics. It's a proof of concept with 6 levels, and most of the basic gameplay elements are there, including the orange and the blue portals, though it has more of a fantasy setting compared to the very sterile lab setting of Portal. And, you know, like many folks who end up doing great things at Valve, the team is essentially plucked from obscurity to do great things within the company and find great success elsewhere after that. So the basic story is this: a Valve developer sees Narbacular at DigiPen's career fair and invites the team to pitch at Valve, and they're hired on the spot. And then after 2 years pass, Portal is released. And there are so many of these rags to riches story that happen within Valve. I assume the company is still kind of known as this, even though they don't release as many games, but it is very much like Gabe Newell's Chocolate Factory. Just, you get the golden ticket. That no children are killed, thankfully, but you know,
that
you learn a little
of.
Something.
That
yes.
we know of.
We don't know what their QA department is like yet. It's all under lock and key.
A lot of NDAs there. Narbacular as well. It is such a, like, I don't say this to like negatively, but it is a very like mid-aughts internet name. Like Narbacular is like, that's, it is from the Bacon Epic era of comedy back then, I would say.
Yeah. And
talking about
Think
Geek, yeah, Bacon.
So is Portal, honestly. I mean, in terms of where it's from, but it avoids those pitfalls because it's written by the most brilliant people on earth, former comedy website writers. You know,
funniest,
I know from experience.
Yeah.
The funniest and smartest people who deserve the most money and acclaim. Let's move on, because so the team's approach with turning Narbacular Drop into Portal was to strip up all the superficial elements so players would not be confused by what they can interact with, just to give them all the necessary information to help them figure out what was a brand new type of game. And then once you get to Portal 2, you can see that, like, okay, people have played Portal 1 and they're comfortable with this style of play. We can dress up the environments a little more. We can make things a little less apparent. But with this new kind of game, you need to be as bare bones as possible in terms of the elements visible to the player.
That's why they end up with such a stark white world is the main thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I do love how that turns out and how it fits into the story they write for the game, and that you spend your entire experience in Portal inside of these, you know, almost like sanitarium-like, you know, all white walls, and you learn pretty quickly that these white walls are for portals and any other wall just does not portal. It doesn't work magically. And you see, but then you also see like little windows, and you can see office environments behind them. Like, oh, so someone's watching me. I mean, obviously get the voice, but you can even just visually, you can tell this is a space made for observation. You have the cameras, which is a fun little like Easter egg, in that, you know, cameras are visible in every room. They follow you around. You can use once you get the portal gun, you can use the portal gun to sort of break the cameras, and it doesn't do anything for you. It might get you an achievement, but like, it's just like a goofy thing you can do. And I'm sure, I mean, I know speedrunners have broken the screen apart, so they might have figured out a way to take a camera off the wall and then bend reality around it and then, you know, skip a level. But still, to a regular layperson, the camera is just a cute little, like, cherry on top. And then
GLaDOS, like, chastises you when you destroy them and stuff like that. So it's,
yeah,
little,
exactly.
Even though it doesn't have a reward, it does have a reward because the game reacts to you doing it.
And then the game is, because the game is so sterile, that as the cracks unfold slowly over time, leading to the eventual, you know, finale where you're entirely behind the scenes, that makes everything seem that much more exciting. It's like, oh no, I'm seeing behind the facade what's really going on here. And it just, it's such the total package. Like, and it starts off just like, oh, this is a really simple background, you know, but it's kind of a glorious, almost like a misdirect. You just, it sets up everything perfectly.
It really, like, drip feeds the intrigue over time in, like, a way that is so clever and reserved, and I respect immensely. And, like, not only that, but it, like, it's so well-paced with the lessons you learn throughout the game, because the whole game is a tutorial. Like, every single, like, place you go into is teaching you a new concept to exploit with the portal gun. And they even start you without the gun to teach you about portals first. Like, they remove every single thing that could possibly confuse you. And it's like, this is how you teach people how to do stuff without telling them with words how to do stuff. It's brilliantly designed.
Yeah, looking at it, I mean, we all have accepted what Portal is, and we all know, oh yeah, the very popular, successful game that we all think is brilliant. But if you look at the expectations for a first-person game in 2007, this is just defying every expectation, because it's a first-person game in which you have a weapon that does not actually hurt enemies. It's just a weapon for traversal. It's sort of like a different version of the gravity gun in Half-Life, where it's like a fun kind of physics-y toy, but it's not a shotgun or anything like that. There's no UI, there's no health, there's no items. There's nothing like that. If someone else is publishing this game, I could see someone stepping in and saying, okay, we need corridors full of robots for the main player to kill between these puzzles, because no one's just going to do a bunch of puzzles back to back. They're going to think it's boring. But because Valve is publishing and making the game, they can stay true to this vision, and I really respect that. I can't see this game coming out in the form that it did if anybody else published it, really.
They wouldn't have known how to sell it. It didn't fit the box of what a thing was to sell. But I'm glad you mentioned Gravity Gun, Bob, because, yeah, I do feel, you know, this definitely felt fresh and new at the time. But, yeah, if you play the Half-Life games that preceded it, it is like a parodic version of how those games tell their stories. You have a silent protagonist that you're slowly introduced to, but one of the first things you see, you're able to see yourself through the portal, and you're like, oh, okay, that's how I know who the character is. I'm always in these eyes. I'm never going to get a cutscene outside of this viewpoint, but there's my intro to who this silent character is. And instead of, you know, you being guided around by the, not the Thin Man, whatever, that guy.
The G-Man.
Instead of that, it's now GLaDOS.
Slenderman.
Yeah, Slenderman's telling you what to do. Instead of that, you have this unseen just talking force, but it definitely works like a parody of a Half-Life game made in the Half-Life studio, which was part of, like, the original appeal of it to me.
I feel like that's also, like, continues on with, like, you know, as you're saying, like, it's kind of like a parody of a Half-Life game. I feel like that is also, like, more evidence for that is the fact that Aperture Science is, like, a direct competitor to Black Mesa, but, like, clearly there's something weird about this company. And then, like, Portal 2 just kind of, like, ups the ante, and it's just like, no, yeah, this was a really weird company run by a really weird guy, and, like, it's so goddamn funny. Jeez.
You really get the sense that they were getting very tired of making the world's best first-person shooters, because with the first Half-Life 2, the gravity gun is basically like a victory lap that ends the game. Like, I am so powerful, I can do all of this cool stuff. And then the episodes, the most memorable stuff from episodes 1 and 2 of the Half-Life 2 series, it's all the gravity gun puzzles and the physics puzzles. And I think Portal's the extension of, we're very tired of finding new ways to give you enemy encounters. What if you just got to play with a cool toy and do these physics puzzles for an entire game? And I think this is the conclusion.